This is CliffCentral.com.
Business Masterclass for the next hour. First half hour, our business skills conversation. As I said, with USB Ed, Richard Angus not here today, and also not Alison Nyandu. But we have Louis Groenewald in the studio, and we also have Arthur Anderson, who runs Africa's Got Game. We've had him on before. In fact, he was our special SME owner guest at the time. And he's doing some great things in terms of transforming society. So he's also joining us as part of our panel. But our special guest, Dr. Doug, is it?
Matthias.
Matthias. Yeah. Dr. Doug Matthias, a very experienced man who's been around the block for many, many years in marketing, sales, all of that. So he's going to kind of, with myself and Louis and Arthur, lead the conversation around sales. Very specifically, though, it's measurement of sales performance. So we'll have other master conversations, if I can call it that, around sales. Today, though, is measurement of sales performance. Arthur, welcome.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
So as no stranger, you're running your own business, a very unique business, and it's very relevant today to small business owners. At 2 o'clock, we have a transformation platform that we just launched, 2 to 2:30. And we have the MEC of Economic Development in the studio, all about transformation in the country. So we're starting with him on the show today. Last week, triple BEE for the SME. So it was a strong triple BEE conversation last week, and it was very relevant to the small business owner. And there's a podcast for that. So do download that and listen to it. All right. Today is different. We used to have an hour business masterclass, and the SMEs sit out there, they listen, and then we add another half hour, and then they just engage us with questions and answers. It's different. Today, that engagement happens while we have the show. So while we interview or have a conversation with Doug in the studio about sales, that's your opportunity. Kevin gets my attention. You ask questions, but before you throw a question at the panel or a comment, you need to pitch your business for 30 seconds. All right, so it's up to you. You have that opportunity. It's up to you to ask an intelligent, bright question or make a good comment. We want to engage you. Of course, we also want to get through this conversation. Yes, so about three of you would be able to ask questions the first half hour. Then we interview our very special guest, Claire O'Keefe, Managing Member, Gajima SA. And during that period, you can also ask questions, of course. All right. All right, gentlemen, I'm glad we have a lady in the studio just now. Just a bit of a rhythm change, you know. Sales, oh my goodness, sales. So many small business owners start their business with a dream to change the world or to change their quality of life or to, I don't know, whatever they want to do, and their motivation that drives them to jump from corporate perhaps into their own business. Maybe they have romantic feelings of what a business would be like. And then they discover they have to sell. Okay, I didn't start my business wanting to sell. I started my business wanting to consult or to help communities or to produce wonderful clothing or perfume or whatever. Mm. But now I discover the heartbeat of my business, the lifeblood of my business is selling. And I don't know how to sell. I don't like selling. Who likes rejection? I mean, come on. Mm. So there we go. That's a bit around that. Now, it won't just be sales, but let's just get initial thoughts here. Doug, you're our expert today representing USB Ed. You also have your own consulting business for many years. Currently, you're very involved with Cell C.
Yeah, I'm the head of marketing at Cell C at the moment.
So you're doing it in the big corporate. You've dealt with all sizes of business. Mm. And your feeling of sales, I mean, just to set the scene.
Yeah, I think it's tough if you're not a salesperson. I think that's got to be the opening gambit, you know. And as you mentioned, a lot of entrepreneurs, and myself included, you know, when you're selling, there are two types. I mean, there's goods and there's services. And I firmly believe that to sell a service is sometimes tougher. You know, it's easier to sell a cup and saucer because at least someone can see the value or see what they're trying to sell and they can compare the price. When you're selling time, it's not easy. And I think one of the big things with great salespeople, it's often instinctive. You know, you can learn, you can force yourself. And I think a lot of successful entrepreneurs who perhaps are not natural salespeople have forced themselves until their businesses are such a critical mass that they can employ people who perhaps would go and pound literally the old proverbial pavements. and take a lot of no's. You know, it's an age-old adage of kissing a few frogs until you get the prince. That happens, you know. Not everyone loves what you think it is, and as much as you're so close to it, there are other people who sometimes do very similar things. So it's not easy, but critical. You know, the only way to grow your top line in any business is to sell. You know, you've got to get something in.
You've got to sit in front of someone and ask for business, and there must be a match. Selling service, you're almost selling yourself more than the product, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And sometimes it's, you know, it's difficult to attach a value to that time, you know. So in other words, if you're selling a consulting service, it's, you can either bill by the hour, which is never a great model. You can bill by the project, or you can get some sort of retainer fee, which is probably preferable. But yeah, you're right. You've got to sell your inherent ability. And sometimes, you know, you're going up against companies with big brand names, you know, a lot of marketing, a lot of years behind them. So that's always the tough part of it, unless it's so unique. And I mean, the success stories are around us. You know, 10 years ago, perhaps, you know, Facebook wasn't what it is today. Now, that's an extreme example. WhatsApp and WeChat and, you know, all these new social services that really started off, and I think the story is well made of how some of those guys became successful. But the average person is not Mark Zuckerberg. The average person wants to sell something out of Ravonia and be successful and earn whatever he or she wants to, but it's got to start with selling.
Okay, Louis, quick comments just generally around selling for our SME audience and those listening, and then Arthur.
Doug mentioned a kind of weariness because he says many people just are not salesmen. With his background experience now, I've had a lot of superb training by American corporates on selling, and I think we mustn't underestimate the point he's making. If you don't have a natural passion for selling, it changed your mindset, because all the difficulties in life come from that mindset. I think it's very important to understand that you may be proficient in areas, but if you don't understand business, leadership, it's all about selling. Now, you yourself, Arjun, had a big problem with selling because you're always involved in other areas. And yet, as time went by, you became a very good salesman until when you realized one day that what you are doing is selling. You can't be a leader without being a salesman in that sense. So change your mindset is very important, I think.
Arthur?
Yeah, I think just putting some time in and building that pipeline for small businesses is very important. And I think that founding members need to spend time and put that time into in terms of articulating their sales pitch to sell what they believe is their product or service's best attributes. I think some of the other things that we need to look at as well, because not all of us are salespeople, is to truly examine and try to decipher when a yes is a yes and when a yes is actually a no. And people are just stringing you along for the sake of the conversation.
Because people sitting across from you sometimes struggle to say no, don't they?
Absolutely.
And they'd rather string you along than say, no, sorry, I'm not interested, thank you.
But the truth is, Arjun, that the professional salesman, often the no is a yes in many ways. So it takes a lot of training. Don't underestimate the training. I love the idea, though, about crystallizing your sales pitch is very important.
Which is why we say to our SMEs out there, if you have a question or any comments to the panel, some challenges you face as you've had to sell and build that pipeline, you're welcome to engage us. But first, pitch your business. It's about pitching your business, pitching your value proposition. Doug, has the game of selling changed with technology and social media being such a critical part of our lives?
I think it depends what you're selling. You know, if I look at the normal sell-up model of a fast food chain, I don't know if that's changed that much. People go in and I mean, these days it's commonplace to say, you know, would you like a soda with it? Would you like extra fries? Whatever the case may be. And I think, you know, again, Lou, you make the point of training. I mean, that stuff is rote. It's every single time. It's repeatable. And that's the beauty of a franchise model, is that it's exactly the same thing. They offer you a loyalty club card. Often when you check out, you get asked, are you a part of a loyalty program, etc. So I don't know if that side of retail has changed. I think on the tech space, I think it has changed. I think it's far more integrated. And I look at conversion selling. You know, I look at certainly the ICT sector of the market. It's complex. And you're selling to professionals these days. You know, I mean, 20 years ago, we'd be selling to a purchasing manager. And no disrespect. I mean, there's still procurement departments. But often now it's the head of IT, you know, and you better know your stuff. So certainly the guys who could probably fly by night and sell on personality and all of those good things, that's changed certainly from the 90s.
Good point.
And then, yeah, you know, social media. A lot of people, I mean, how often do you buy versus just fulfill my order? So for argument's sake, if I'm going to buy an item, specifically a high-value item, I do a lot of work on the net beforehand. You know, I don't want that guy to sell me something if I'm going to buy, say, a motor car. I know the car, what it does, doesn't do and all the rest of it. And all you want to do is just go and test it out. What I don't want the guy to do is to try and sell me another model, because, you know, you run the risk of the irritation factor. Obviously, that sales guy, if he's a good guy, he's going to want to sell hopefully what's right for the customer, and sometimes not. Sometimes he's going to sell where he makes the most money. And I think we've all seen it. You know, you're going to go buy, I don't know, a toaster at a shop, and the guy wants to sell me another brand that I didn't want to, you know. So I think one's got to always look at that, and sometimes that's where sales guys pick up a bad reputation, where people say, well, you're only selling me where you've either got your sales incentive or where you're going to make your sales target. What I wanted was brand A, and you're trying to sell me brand B. So I think it's changed to a degree, but it's still, you know, you're selling to people.
So in other words, your buyer is more informed, and therefore your whole approach should change. We've got a question here which does involve a pitch. And we'll ask you as a panel, how do you think they pitch their business? Okay, but then they can engage the panel. Okay, who do we have?
Jabul Griffiths from La Chonge Designers. I'm the founding member of La Chonge Jewelry Designers. We do more contemporary African pieces and fashion pieces. In terms of sales, what I do struggle with, because I focus sometimes more on design than in selling, so I just wanted guidance in terms of what would be a good split of what percentage of my time should be spent on sales, you know, focusing on sales and focusing on design. Just a good guidance in terms of that.
All right. Firstly, how was her pitch, Doug?
Yeah, I think it was quite clear. You know, I think I knew exactly what the business does, and she made the issue pretty clear in terms of the question, the percentage between design and selling.
But we don't know where to get hold of you.
Well, I think that was the point I was going to make in terms of distribution. Where do you sell it?
Yeah.
You were going to talk about the referral part of it. Okay, my question was really a question of where are you going to sell it? And I think that will lead to the answer of how much time you should spend selling versus design.
Right. Okay, let's answer her. If you want to comment on the pitch, you're welcome. Let's try and give her some input there. A business owner, and I'm struggling to divide my time between what I really enjoy doing, I guess, designing, and actually going out and selling. I don't know if there's a perfect formula. So Arthur, Doug, Louis, let's quickly answer.
Okay, I believe there are other types of ways to get out to market, and it doesn't always have to be you. So you can find a distribution network. Many of those are available online. Young people wanting to sell products and services but do not have that product but are willing to do it for a fee. So you can get commission-based earners to actually distribute and market your product on your behalf.
So you multiply yourself a little bit more.
Exactly.
And Doug?
Yeah, no, I think that was what I was alluding to, Arthur, that you've got to look at, you know, if it's just you and your passion really is around design, which is the technical skill, well then, do you have a third party? Who are you going to go to? You know, is it ranging from the flea market at Rosebank all the way through to a high-end retail store, you know, and everything in between? Now, it's probably not going to be a retailer up front because you don't have the volume, you can't produce it, etc. So the answer somewhere, and I agree with Arthur, it's a question of finding the people who's going to distribute your product for you.
But right now it's more selling than designing, I would say. Building your business depends on the cycle of the business where you are at it. Louis?
The truth is there are some practical business imperatives, and if you don't sell, you have no business. Just one thing I want to mention, further to the advice given by the two other consultants, is the fact that remember, you're a designer, artistic, creative kind of person. Somehow you must incorporate that passion into your selling. In other words, you sell that, and that selling will be more than adventure for you as well. It must be a cold clinical affair, because people just won't respond. It'll create that what Doug calls the irritation factor as well.
The moment you then get others to sell it, then they don't have that level of passion. So then it's skill, isn't it? Then it's all the things we're going to talk about in the moment. Any other comments for our panel member there? No? I mean our audience member? Okay, so thank you so much. Do you want to tell us where if you don't put in your pitch where people can get hold of you, then you may just lose out, okay? So do your pitch effectively, do it slick, and then engage the panel. Did you want to add that quickly?
Yes, our customers can follow us at on Facebook. It's La Chonge Jewelry Designers, or on Instagram, it's @LaChonge_designers. Thank you.
All right. Doug, what else must these SME owners know? We talk of sales metrics, and that gets to the technicality. Maybe if I have a bit of a sales force now, one or two or three reps out there selling, getting my name and my product out there, Just tell us, take us through that a bit.
I think, you know, for us, it's really a question of analyzing. Say you've got three sales reps, and then it's a question of going through each part of the process. So the first one would be the product knowledge. And I mean, Louis touched on it, knowing the product. You know, so many times in a complex business, people don't have their detailed product knowledge. And the moment you get to the first objection, well, you can't move to second base. So it's a question of understanding the investment that you're going to put in training. And even in the case of the jewelry designer, you made the point of passion versus skill. How much of that passion do you impart on a third party, and how do you do it? So it's the time spent on the first phase, training, product knowledge. Then it's a question of opening. How many doors can you knock on? Who are you going to talk to? How are you going to open it? And it really gets to the time spent on each one versus the return, because quite obviously the more you spend before you get to a close, well, the more expensive the cost of sale is. The third aspect is actually then pitching the product, getting the time, going in front of somebody, chatting through the thing, and getting to a point where hopefully it's a yes, and sometimes it's a no. Then if it's a no, overcoming objection. So you get into that whole decision tree of what do you do next? Do you sell A versus B? I've heard you. I've got another solution. Now, to do that effectively, you have to know your back end story pretty well. Then you get into the close. Then the next thing is, what size did you close? You know, what was your basket size in retail, or what was your, if you're selling a computer integrated system, you know, how many millions of rands did you close that deal for versus the time? Obviously, the selling cycle plays a huge role in that as well. So, you know, I don't want to go into too much detail now, but there are definite things. And quite ironically, sales is actually one of the easier areas in the business to measure, because all of those things are tangible, and it's got an attached cost to it. So you get Jack sells twice as much as John in the same amount of time at a higher basket value. Well, you know, quite clearly you've got a star and you've got a guy who's underperforming. And then you go down the whole route of, well, why is he underperforming, et cetera, et cetera. So, There's a lot of stuff, you know, that you do need to take care of, and certainly those are just some of the first few steps that you'd look at.
We'll look at a few more principles. We've got another question. Go for it, Pam, in our audience.
Yeah, my name is William. I'm actually representing Isiyalo Manufacturing. We actually own a customized clothing manufacturing and retailing, as well as a marketing services business. We've been in business for the last 6 years. We basically aspire to be a well-rounded manufacturer and a clothing retailer for the next 2 years. You can contact us on 082-809-4815, and the email is isialu@gmail.com. The question that I might have, or as a comment, is that I was once asked a question as to, in marketing, which target market might you find yourself comfortable marketing to, you know? And that obviously crosses, you know, across color, across age, across everything. And one thing that I find with sales is that it's very instinctive. You know, you might find a person who's non-educated who can be able to sell a product. You find that person who's well-educated and cannot sell a product. So what I find ultimately is that people, if they can trust you, you can sell anything.
Okay, thank you. How was the pitch, Arthur?
I thought that was fantastic, and I love the close on that one, because a lot of people buy you, a lot of people trust you. So whatever you put forward, it should be about you, and you are that brand. So I really like that close. So I certainly believe that building that brand and getting yourself visible should be done, as this gentleman has mentioned. I mean, that is most important, that you can get it out there and communicate it clearly to the rest of the people. So your target market, be clear on who that is and how you're going to reach those people. Take the time to invest and research, you know, who they are and why you chose them and why you selected them. And also look at third parties to give you more advice on why you selected that. Because oftentimes we sell to the people we are most comfortable with, but doesn't necessarily mean that is our target market.
Okay, Louis and Doug, a pitch there, and then comment on what was said by William, I think.
Yeah, I think, you know, I agree with Arthur. I think the pitch was very good, so I was quite happy with that. It just looks like quite a wide business, though. You know, you're going from manufacturer to distributor to selling, so it's a bit of upstream and downstream, so I'm always a little bit cautious about that, because you lose a bit of the speciality. And then, yeah, you know, you can't... you know, we live in a heterogeneous society. You know, South Africa is a complex society, multiple languages, etc., etc. So who is the one target market? You know, if I just look at certain products, they just cut across everything, you know, and you need to be able to relate to people differently. You know? And I think it's understanding who you want to sell to and what are those hot buttons. Now, And sometimes people I just look at age as an example. So if you're going to sell to take internet connectivity to a person who's clearly a pensioner, you'd need to sell it differently. And I don't want to be too stereotypical, but your pitch is very different to an 18-year-old kid who's going to come in there. He's going to tell you how that stuff works. And so I think it's important to be aware. Now, in the clothing market, quite clearly, sometimes clothing by its very nature of fashion lends itself to a specific type of carry, whether it's a male skew, female skew, age skew. And then it's a question of trying to find your target market from there on out and then narrowing it down.
Yeah. Louis?
Willem, thank you. I appreciate your pitch. I agree, though, with Doug and Arthur as well, quite frankly. The only thing that worries me a little bit is how do you differentiate? In other words, I like what you say. It sounds professional, sounds passionate, sounds knowledgeable too, but I just don't know how you differentiate your service out there. This is really what Doug is also saying. You should know exactly what your market is.
Always a challenge, isn't it? The whole world of selling. Before we go to another question, what else is in this, call it sales metrics? I mean, time spent selling. I think you mentioned that. I mean, one guy can close it on average. Mm. I don't know if you have a small business that you'll have all these things in place necessarily. Mm. Mm. The load response time, lead response time, rather. Yeah. What's that particularly?
I think it's sometimes, if you're going to get something, and I think it's so critical in an SME business, and as I say, I've got my own consultancy, is when somebody does get to you, how quickly do you get back to them? In other words, are you going to get back to them immediately on email? Are you going to respond to your emails immediately? Most people have got email on the phone these days, and so that, I think, is
odd. The expectation is therefore fast.
I think it is. I think we live in that society, and if you phone a small company, you almost expect a quicker response time to, say, a bigger company. And I think that, to me, is about the speed to market. Because if you're going to look at a USP or a differentiator, it's got to be your ability to get back to your customer quickly. Gone are the days of writing a letter and you wait. That's ridiculous. So I think we, as an SME, one of the things I certainly learned is that you need to be on top of your admin. Now, often we spoke about, we spoke about jewelry design or passion. We spoke about selling. Now we're speaking about back office. You've got to have that back office sorted out as well. Okay. And in businesses, in corporates, it's sometimes easier because you've got enough people. So some people are farmers and some people are hunters. Hunters being the salespeople, hunt for new business. Farmers being the admin people. And sometimes it's not the same person. Now, I've seen some great salespeople who are poor at admin because they're just wired differently. As an SME, as you're growing your business, you can't afford that. You don't have the money or the luxury to go and employ different people to do your back end. And if you can, that's, I really do think, it's, depending on the size of your business, quite a luxury. So you need your lead generation, and then you better get back to the customer quickly.
Okay, well, look at back office now, and I want us to think of very practical things in terms of managing your pipeline. It's a simple thing, but there are really, again, the word simple, documents which helps you understand your own pipeline. But before we go there, let's take another question from the floor. Go for it.
Hi, I'm Chwara Machiva. I'm founder and creative director of House of William. We specialize in revamping old clothing, tailored garments, ready-to-wear and styling. We've seen a significant gap in the plus-size market between males and females, and we are the solution because we view the human body as a canvas and textiles as our medium. Our Instagram handles are House of William. Instagram and Twitter handles House of William. Our contact details are 060-691-8340. My question is, how do you get a customer to buy your product without them feeling like the item is overpriced? Thank you.
Okay, how do you get them to buy a product without feeling it's overpriced? Okay, first, Doug, pitch, and then Arthur, how do you think
the pitch went? I think the pitch was good. I think it was very clear, and it kind of covered all the aspects it needed to.
Okay, Louis, comment on the pitch and then also the question.
Well, the
and I'll come to Arthur, sorry.
Yeah, the question on, well, obviously it's a challenge every salesman has, but first of all, one is to look at the mindset. You really must look. In other words, professional people don't give the price until the end of the story because it's about value. And if you believe you have value, you must just learn to communicate that. If you've got a hang up, though, that my product is good but overpriced, be careful of that overpriced.
They'll sense it in you, won't they?
Be careful about that.
Okay, Arthur.
I support that. Sell the value, right? So many times you walk into a store and you'll find that there's a plethora of options out there, but the brand that you normally go with is your brand, and sometimes you don't even ask the question, why is it 100 Rand more? And I think that's something that everybody needs to focus on, is actually believing in the value of what they are selling and put their effort into understanding what it is and why it's important to somebody else to buy that particular product and why they've actually come into your store and selected you as an option to come and explore and see what you have. So I would certainly look at that. I do not think about the pricing that I put together, you know, when I'm having the conversation with the person. I'm looking at exactly why I think they have that problem or how I can solve that problem for them. And I like your market. Your market's really great because of that plus size and it's a growing market, you know. So I like
Doug, add to that. Sell it for a high price, but people don't mind.
Yeah, it is a tough one. And I guess the question would be compared to who, compared to what? You know, and are you comparing like with likes? In other words, if you're making a bespoke garment, it's recycled, it's a plus size, well then I think it gets to opposition knowledge. You know, you need to be able to know who you're comparing it to. Now, if I can just digress slightly, and I'll tell you, when I was in standard 9, standard 10, those days, grade 11, grade 12, this was a long time ago, I worked in a very small little mom and pop shop in Port Elizabeth, my hometown, and we sold clothing. And this guy said to me, have you ever sold before? I said, never sold before. And he said to me, let me explain this nicely to you. He says, when people walk in here, it's an absolute privilege to be able to sell them because they can go to Pep and they can go to Jet. Those were the opposition, and much bigger range, cheaper prices, etc., etc. He says, but what you do with that, they don't do is you give them that personal service. And when that guy comes in here, when you close the curtains for that man to fit on his trousers, when he opens that curtain, you have socks and you have belts with him, because ones goes with twos goes with, nothing goes in this shop by itself, okay? And those are invaluable lessons, and it's about selling cross value. He says because cheaper he can buy. Those were often a lay-by market, guys would pay it down and after 3-4 months maybe come and get their garment. But it's that pride when you look at that man and he's bought his very, very first suit or his pocket hanky or his shiny pair of shoes. You take pride in that, and he says that you can't buy Jet, you can't buy that at Pep stores. And I think that those lessons was a long, long time ago, and I've retold that story so many times. It's about believing in your product, making that person feel special, and understanding that price is just one of many things why somebody buys a garment or for that matter any product.
Very good input. All right, before we go to the next question, practically what must I have to manage my pipeline? I mean, once a week I have a sales meeting, not if I'm on my own maybe, but if I have some staff, just some really practicalities. I know I don't do that enough. It's where you actually have a document that tracks your pipeline with different phases. You know, how do you manage the sales metrics almost?
I think, well, you know, in a bigger company it's probably easier because, you know, you have people, you have sales teams and depends on the size, you probably have sales managers, you have regional managers and so on. But I mean, if you're looking at the SME business, very different. There you need to get, you know, you need to garner your own prospects. And I mean, we spoke about, Arthur mentioned a distribution channel. So if you've got that, how often do you visit those distributors? What are they going to get for you? You know, if you're a one-man band and you don't have that, well, how often are you going to get out? And that's the question about time spent in design, time spent thinking versus time spent knocking, phoning, emailing. How are you going to get, where are you going to get a list? I mean, how are you going to get it out? And I think the pipeline management in an SME is very, very different. It's often more hands-on as opposed to a corporate. And sometimes it's easier to manage a sales team in the corporate because you have all these tools. You know, you have everything. And one of the tools is sales incentives. You know, so where are you against your target? And if you don't do X, you're not going to get paid Y. And I mean, I've come out of an environment where we've used through the years massive sales incentives, and they really do work for the good guys. I mean, non-performers, well, you know, that it doesn't work so well for them. So, you know, it's self-tracking.
Okay, Arthur, any comments there? Practically, you're out there doing it as Doug and Louis and myself.
Yes, so for many small entrepreneurs, I mean, get yourself one of those mobile CRM tools. Try to get your stages nicely outlined because you know exactly what it is you need to go through to get to that sale. And then measure yourself all the time, you know, and make sure that you do not procrastinate about calling people, because I find a lot of small businesses, we had a great meeting and we had a good coffee and then we pause and we wait. And I think it's very important to engage people earlier on. Doug had mentioned it. We are living in an era now where people want answers today. They want answers now. So get to respond as quick as possible, even if you feel that you're now being a nuisance. But, you know, there's a nice way to do that. Also, going back to what he mentioned earlier, there's something that's called engage first, right, and then sell later. So always make sure your engagement is active. Always make sure you're engaging the client first and making sure you're connecting with that person. That is always, you know, a valuable attribute to your sales cycle.
Here's a question. Is it practical to say to an SME owner every single day you should have something sales in your diary? So we all have a list of things to do. Today I really feel like designing. Should I rather keep the rhythm of selling going all the time? So even if it's 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes, 30 minutes of calls, which really means do the difficult things first. So I've got to sit, I'm fresh in the morning, let me do something sales, a couple of emails out or a couple of calls. Because I could get lost in my design because I love designing, man. And then 2-3 days have gone by and I feel like I've worked hard and I feel like I'm productive, but my sales pipeline is disappearing. Doug?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think it is a discipline, you know. And it doesn't even have to be a call. You know, these days, let's take a person. Sometimes people feel a little bit shy to call. They're a little bit resistant. That you can mail. You know, you can get a database. You can send out something. You can design a flyer. You can do something else that just gives you that gap. And hopefully, you know, you can follow up. And I think Arthur made the point of just sending out a set of minutes. That's another touch point. So what you're looking for in any business is multiple touch points. So the more times you can talk to somebody, and it's not selling, you know, it's about engaging with a person. Obviously, the ultimate goal is to close the deal. But it's, you know, and so often you find that people are bad at just sending out a set of minutes. So it takes like a week, and you still haven't got a very simple one-pager as a summary of what we discussed.
All right, so last question in this half hour of the Business Masterclass. Then, of course, we go into the interview of an SME owner, and I'll introduce also in the next in due course. And, of course, pitch your business. Who's the last person for this half hour? And then you have chance in the next half hour.
Good day, my name is Isaac Mavuso, and thank you for the opportunity. I'm Isaac Mavuso, facilitator, speaker, coach. I basically do business plan development workshops and basic entrepreneurship in the township. And one of the challenges that I've found is that people struggle a lot in understanding compliance. For instance, when people are selling their products, they would find somebody says, okay, give me, a profile. Do you have your bank account? Is everything sorted? And then there's a hiccup somewhere there. And how do people overcome that? How do people marry compliance and sales? Basically, if you want to know more about me, you can just go to www.isaacmavuso.co.za. Thank you.
Thank you, Isaac. All right, Louis, the pitch, and then comment on what he's saying. I mean, that I think is a real challenge for SMEs.
No, I love the pitch. I must admit, Zero In does it in townships specifically. I love that part. His question, of course, is a very important one to understand the compliance side. And I'd love our guests to answer that as well.
Yeah, Doug, I mean, that's part of what we need to lobby with small business development. Yeah. You know, the compliance issue is almost as heavy sometimes for small businesses than large ones. Comment on the question there?
I think the pitch was fine. I just waited at the end for the actual response mechanism. So that was fine. Yeah, I think, you know, it gets back to what we discussed. You know, starting a small business is not an easy thing because it's multifaceted. And I think if there's one thing people take out of the show is the fact that it is multifaceted, that you do need to have a passion, have a good service, understand compliance, understand admin, do the back end well, follow up, be, and it's ABC, always be closing. You know, it's that mindset. It's a bit of a cliche, but it does work. And I think, you know, just to your original question of the compliance side, it's sometimes forcing yourself, much like you force yourself to be able to sell, you force yourself to be able to do the back end discipline stuff correctly as well.
Arthur, final comment?
Clear and succinct, but I like that. ABCs, always be closing. You cannot spend all your time trying to be compliant first and then trying to sell your business later. I think a lot of people should be spending more time on actually getting their business known, visible, getting those sales going, and then focusing on compliance or even doing that concurrently when you have that quiet hour at night.
Oh, man, so many businesses, small businesses, sell what they almost don't have. But the big boys do it as well, don't they? They sell their computer into the market long before it's ready, or their cell phone package or whatever it is.
Sell on concept, right?
Sell on concept. Selling is not easy, but it is the lifeblood of your business. So that was a really interesting conversation. Thank you, Doug, so much. And you now stay on board. We're now going to interview our SME owner. Any of you jump in. And, of course, we have our live audience that we try and balance. If you have questions for our special guest, who happens to be an expert on sales as well, but it's also about her business. We're going to go to her in a minute, so a quick break, and then we're going to zoom in on Claire O'Keefe.
Correct.
Okay, from managing member, started Gajima SA, and she's like Mrs. or Miss Sales. We'll find out more about her in a moment. So you certainly have a very strong panel today. If you have any questions around sales, stay with us. CliffCentral.com